You are listening to a podcast of the Geek.io Media Network. For all of our shows and more, visit geek-io.net. And to help support the network, head over to patreon.com/geek.io.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to Life of an Accounting Droid. I'm your host, as always, Neil, bringing you episode number 61. So for this week's episode, got quite a few things to go through, so I'll jump right into it. So the usual theme and news, I'll have a quick tip. And then for the entertainment, a few bits of news, a film review, Star Wars segment, and we'll round out the episode with a You Can Relax segment. So to start it off with a theme, the theme for this week is reconciliation. So what accounting reconciliation usually entails is that it's a process that uses two sets of records to ensure that figures are accurate and in balance. It is usually used to match the money spent to the money earned. In more specific terms or more personal terms, it is also used to match when a customer is paying multiple invoices to the records that are on file with the company itself. So if I say that invoice one was for $5 and the customer is paying $3, then I now know because of that reconciliation or matching that there's a $2 discrepancy and I need to know why that is. It can be anything from invoicing error, short shipment, the customer made a mistake, or a variety of different reasons, and that can be from anywhere from one invoice to multiple invoices or anything like that. So it all depends on what's going on, and reconciliation aims to find that difference or to make sure that no differences exist. So for example, a customer might have an account balance of $500, but they're paying $300, and now you need to know where that $300 belongs, because there's maybe 15 invoices open and they're only paying for 10, and you want to make sure that what they're paying for matches where you apply that payment, and to make sure that they're paying their invoices on time. The same thing happens on the payable side when you want to pay a check and you want to pay for before you pay, you want to make sure that what you received is what you're getting invoice for, so you match your receiving to your vendor invoices and make sure that they are in check, and let the vendor know if there's any different discrepancies, shortages, overages, price discrepancies, or anything like that. So with that being said, I'll jump right into this week's tech segment. So to start it off, Google's Cardboard camera is now available for iOS. So if you've been waiting for that, it is now compatible, and the features are there, so you can play around with that. Asus announces Zenfone 3 Deluxe in Taiwan this week. It's a 5.7-inch device with a Qualcomm Snapdragon 821 processor. So as far as I know, that's the latest version of the processor. The most other recent smartphones released this year, like the OnePlus 3, the LG V20 as well, and a couple others run the Qualcomm 820. On a side note, the next Nexus devices are the Sailfish, and I forget what the other Google devices expected to be called, but the current rumor is that they'll also be running the Snapdragon 821 processor, but we don't know that for sure yet. But back to the Zenfone 3 Deluxe, it will also have 6 GB of RAM, 256 GB of storage, with micro SD card support, a 3000 mAh battery, 23 megapixel rear camera, and 8 megapixel front camera. The rear camera will support 4K video recording, and the device itself supports USB Type-C charging. So definitely a pretty good device. I don't know about pricing and if it'll be available elsewhere in the world, but as far as the Taiwanese market goes, it's a pretty good device. The Chrome beta was updated to version 54 for Android and now adds background audio playback. So in the event you're listening to something in the browser or a video or something like that and you wanted to keep playing by pushing the home button, it should support that a lot better. And finally, LG is announced the LG X Power on Sprint. I'm not sure if it was a US only or Europe only device, so I'll assume it's worldwide, but the device itself is supported on Sprint, as I said. It has a 5.3-inch screen, 8-megapixel rear camera, 16 gigs of storage with a micro SD card support, 2 gigabytes of RAM, and a 4100 mAh battery. It does only run Android 6, so not Android 7 just yet, so it's a decent mid to lower end device, but with a powerful enough battery. So if you're on Sprint and want a decently powered device, then definitely is definitely worth checking out. So that's all there is for that. So for this week's quick tip, I wanted to share how to do a speed test without installing any additional apps, or if you're on the go and want a quick way of doing a speed test to check your internet connection speed, then you can now do that right from your browser or mobile browser. So what you'll do is, for example, in my test, I use Chrome, but I do imagine doing a Google search in any mobile browser will bring this up. And you'll do a search for speed test, and then you'll have a nice simplified interface that tells you how fast the test runs, which takes 30 seconds or less, is backed by a company called Measurement Lab, so you know who they are. And you can learn more about them if you so choose. And then all you need to do to run the test is push the button that says run speed test, and it'll run the test. It'll give you your download speed and upload speed, so you get a good amount, a quick test, and it'll tell you if how good your internet connection is and what you'll be able to do on that internet connection. So that's really all there is to that. I'll have a link in the show notes for how to do that. It's a quick and easy way to do that. You don't really get much other information, but speedtest.com does have its own app for Google Play for sure, most likely for iOS as well, I'm assuming. But if you want a more full-featured test, then you can do that as well. The mobile version of the speed test that I just explained will tell you the server that they use and all of that as well, so in case you need it. But it's a good and simple and easy way of doing a speed test, and you don't have to have a dedicated app just for that if you don't need it. So that's all there is for that. So I'll jump right into this week's entertainment segment. So to start it off with some news, MacGyver is set to return to CBS on September 23rd, so next week. It's going to be a prequel to the prior MacGyver series that starred Richard Dean Anderson. This prequel series is going to talk about how he started how MacGyver started the organization within the U.S. government to do various tasks and missions and all of that. It with out of the box thinking. Star Trek Discovery was announced to be now based on the Star Trek the original series episode Balance of Terror. This is season 1, episode 14. So this is the episode where we learn about the Romulans and learn a little bit more about the neutral zone. So they're going to kick off from there. On the flip side, as far as news goes, the show itself has been delayed from January 2017 to May 2017. So we'll have to wait a few more months for the release. Amazon has upgraded its Audible app to add Audible channels. This is a feature that's also being added to Amazon Prime, which includes a rotating selection of 50 audiobooks from the Audible catalog. So if you are a Prime member and you don't necessarily want to have a subscription to Audible, or you want to start getting into audiobooks, then this is a way to check them out, listen to them, see if audiobooks are something you like. Look out for a You Can Relax segment coming up where I talk about my experience there. A little bit of a teaser that it is related to The Art of War and Littlefinger from Game of Thrones. And finally, to round out American Horror Story announced their season 6 title, and it will be called My Roanoke Nightmare. I didn't really read too much into what the announcement said anything specific, or what the series might be about. And I think basically that's all I saw, and I didn't have a chance to do too much research into it, but that is what the title is. So I'm expecting the previous season, number 5, I think it was American Horror Story Hotel, to come to Amazon Prime. So when that happens, I will start watching that as well. So with that, I've been continuing to watch Stargate SG-1. I'm still in the middle of season 3, so pretty good season there, or a pretty good show still, I mean, but of course I'm biased, it is my favorite show, and I'm continuing to enjoy all of the missions. Otherwise, I did have a chance to continue watching Fear the Walking Dead, In this case, I had a chance to watch season 2, episode 11, Pablo and Jessica. So this was a pretty straightforward episode. I'm still enjoying the Nick portions more. We get a little bit more backstory into his time as a drug addict and what he's learned. So he's still been paying attention and more of his life with the new group of people in the town. The bit with the zombie with the rest of the group where his family is in the hotel was actually pretty good in this episode. I did like that they were starting to think a little bit. They're trying to figure out how to get the zombies out of the hotel. I did like the pier scene, so that was a pretty good part of the episode as well. So definitely a season that I'm enjoying more than the rest. So that's all for that. So as far as this week's film review, I had a chance to finally watch Hail Caesar. I know it got a little bit of mixed reviews. Its IMDb rating was at 64%, or 64%. On Rotten Tomatoes, the critics really liked it. It was at 85%, but the audience didn't like it so much because it was at, or at least the ratings at 45%. The movie itself released on February 5th, 2016. It has a runtime of 106 minutes. The tagline for the movie is Lights, Camera, Abduction, with a summary of a Hollywood fixer in the 1950s works to keep the studio's stars in line. So essentially we have the main character with the studio who's managing the various movies that are going on. And when their biggest star gets kidnapped, he wants to keep it under wraps and how to manage everyone there and who he can trust with that information and bring the star back. So as far as a review of the movie, for a movie about hailing Caesar, there's not a lot of Caesar in it. So I'm not sure if there was a play, it was supposed to be a play on the words, or because of it's supposed to break that wall with the main movie being Hail Caesar, but I thought there would have been more of a mix there, or they would have kind of merged the movie in the movie of Hail Caesar with what's going on in the movie overall, but I would have thought there would have been more of that than that rather than none of it at all. When I was watching the movie, it seemed like a movie star version of The Legend of Ron Burgundy. So in The Legend of Ron Burgundy, we had Will Ferrell playing a reporter and the antics that go on there. So in this case, we have George Clooney playing a big movie star and the antics of what's going on there with various movie stars and himself as well with the kidnapping. So in that vein, I thought it was actually a pretty good movie and worth watching. One of the random bits in the movie is that there can be only one scene with the Highlander. So, Christopher Lambert, or Lambert, depending on how you want to say his last name, but he makes an appearance in the movie, and I thought it was a good appearance. I liked his role. I was having trouble placing the movie in the actor, and I was like, I know that voice, I know that guy, who is it? And so I started thinking throughout the rest of the movie, and I realized who it was, and it was good to see him playing a role in the movie. And finally, in the Hail Caesar capital, or not capital, but I forget the movie studio's name, but it's far too easy to get $100,000 from accounting and have no oversight. So this was the one piece that kind of bugged me in the movie, is that the studio fixer needed $100,000 to pay for the ransom, and he casually asked if it's in petty cash, and they say no. And then he asked if accounting themselves can loan it and get it out and give it to him. And they didn't really seem like they showed it too well. But it kind of bugged me that it was far too easy for him to get the money and then give it to the people who kidnapped the star and be done with it. So I don't know. It was just really weird. It was one of the loose ends that I wish they could have rounded out a little bit better. But overall, the movie was pretty good. It didn't have as many laughs as I expected it to. I thought it was going to be more of a comedy movie, but overall, I actually did like it. It was pretty entertaining. It was a movie star getting kidnapped. The premise that they bring in the trailer was good enough to want me to watch it. So I want to say it was probably, as far as score, I want to say the IMDb rating of 65% is probably about accurate. It wasn't that great of a movie just because of, for example, things like that $100,000 not having any base, not really working for me. Unless in the time it was just easier to get money and be done with it. But There wasn't, I was expecting more laughs or more humor or something, maybe all the different movies that were being worked on, like all the stars, to have them maybe come together as a super up-and-coming movie stars to come and get them to rescue their head movie star or something along those lines. Or something like that, just something, but rather than having all these other actors and people show up and no eventual payoff for that. So I don't know, this, I felt that they could have done a little bit more with the movie and they didn't go far enough to round it out, but I liked where they were going with it, and it's a movie that's worth watching. So if you want to rent the movie, it is worth a rental. So I'm kind of glad I really didn't see it in the movie theater, but if you want a good fun movie, then it is worth a watch. So that's really all there is for that. So with that, I'll jump into this week's Star Wars profile. And in this case, I wanted to talk about the Battle of Coruscant. So this is probably one of the most pivotal battles we see in the prequel series, but we actually don't get to see the build-up to it unless you watch Star Wars or Clone Wars, the TV series, and you get to see that. But if you don't, then the attack is kind of incomplete. So the battle itself occurred 19 years prior to the Battle of Yavin. It was orchestrated, as we now know, by Darth Sidious / Chancellor Palpatine, or if you don't... Or I guess we're led to assume that it's there, but as far as I remember from the movie, it was a strike led by General Grievous, and probably... Or we're led to believe that Count Dooku orchestrated all. It was more of a separatist thing, but behind the scenes, if you read a little bit about it, Chancellor Palpatine / Darth Sidious orchestrated the whole thing to kidnap him and get him off the planet. It didn't actually end the way they expected the battle to end. It resulted in the saving of the Chancellor by Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker, and also the death of Darth Tyrannus or Count Dooku by Anakin, so the head of the Separatists, and I say head in quotes, that it led to his death, so the Separatists now lost their leader. Lord Sidious to find a new apprentice, and it made General Grievous the de facto head of the Separatist army. The bit of background about the attack itself was that it wasn't actually a random attack on the capital. But because the Republic forces were stretched so thin in the war itself overall in the galaxy, so they were all over the galaxy fighting various battles, so the army protecting the planet itself, the planet of Coruscant, was thin. So it was actually a good time for the Separatists to attack and even make the attempt to begin with to kidnap Chancellor Palpatine. So... it actually worked in their favor to begin with, so that's how they were able to pull it off. But because Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker made it back, they were the best choice to make the rescue. It seems like if anyone else were to attempt the rescue, they would have failed. And by the end of the battle, Count Dooku was dead, and General Grievous was able to escape. So that is all for that. So for this week's You Can Relax segment, I wanted to talk about my research method for getting a new cell phone. So, I forget offhand, I may have mentioned that my screen has cracked on my existing phone. So, while it still works for the most part, I figured it's time to, or I will eventually want to buy a new cell phone, but because it still works it works fine as well, since I don't really hold the phone to my head for phone calls, the cracked screen doesn't really bother me, but... in the end, it's still a cracked screen, and the cost of repairing it was not worth the repair cost, so I'm just going to find a new cell phone. But which cell phone to buy, and should I buy one right away or not? So I started making a list of the phones that are out there and ones that are coming up. I haven't put the ones that are coming up just yet, just because I don't know the specs, but the ones that are out there, I made a list, so phones like the OnePlus 3, the Galaxy S7, Galaxy S7 Edge, the Note 7, the LG V20, the iPhone 7, and the iPhone 7 Plus, and I think there's one or two other ones, or actually also the Moto Z Player, the Moto Z Unlocked. Not the Moto Z Droid, because that's on Verizon, but I made a list of all the specs, what operating system they use, so what how their processor is, RAM, onboard storage, do they have expandable memory, what kind of camera do they have, what version of Bluetooth. So I made that list to see which phones I would want, which phones I don't want. I had a chance to hold a Moto Z Droid Edition. I think it's going to be the exact same version for all the other carriers, so... I had a chance to hold that. I had a chance to hold the Galaxy S7 and the Galaxy S7 Edge. And play around with them as well. So I've ruled out the Galaxy S7 and S7 Edge. Just because it seems like I do like a stock Android experience. So the Moto Z is still in. Even though it does have a smaller battery, it still currently only runs Android 6. But it should get that Android 7 update. I'm not going to really hold out for the Galaxy S7 and S7 Edge because I don't really need the extra features that they provide. I don't really like the UI, the Samsung UI with, I forget what it's called offhand now. I haven't thought about it in a while, but, I don't really want to wait, you know, a year or who knows how long. Like, I don't like to keep left in suspense for when it'll be upgraded to Android 7. So... there's that, and then there's LG V20. I like the dual camera. I like that it's running Android 7, the latest version of Android, out of the box. So overall, it's a good phone. So right now, if I were to buy a phone today, I would probably go with the LG V20 or the Moto Z Play. The Moto Z Play, as far as I can tell, or last report I read, it's going to be released in October. So the only phone I could actually buy today that I would want I think the LG V20 comes out next month as well. So if I were to buy a phone today, I might go with the OnePlus 3, just because it's not a pure stock Android experience, but it's close enough, and it is the most powerful phone available. It's more powerful than the Samsungs, and more powerful than the iPhones. I compared it to the iPhones just so I have a baseline for what their specs are and what they're offering. So a phone today, I'd probably buy a OnePlus 3, but I'm trying to hold out till next month. I think the Google announcement for their phones is going to be on October 4th, so depending on what they offer and what their phones are going to be, I'll make my decision then. Between the LG V20 and the Moto Z Play, if they were both running Android 7, then I might go with the LG V20 just because of the whole camera thing. But I kind of want to see where they go with, or where they go, or how their devices perform in the field. I've had an experience with the Moto X, so I know how Motorola's devices are. So I would, at the moment, I'm leaning towards a Moto Z. So. And I've never owned an LG device, and a family member recently did have the LG, I think V10, and it locked up on him, so I'm kind of hesitant because of that to buy that. If the rumors are correct for the Google phone, and they're going to go with HTC, then it's going to put another kink in the plan. I want to assume that the last HTC devices with Google, as far as their Nexus line went, were good devices, so I'll probably go with that if it's between that and the LG, but it also depends on what the specs are and what models they offer. So the show notes will have a link to the post I made, as well as which also has a link to the spreadsheet I have created. So if you want to keep track of what I'm doing and what I'm looking for, and as I make changes, then you can check that out. And if you want to add a device on that you like, that or that you might want me to consider, then I'd be happy to take a look and add that to the list as well. I'm not really looking at prices, mostly because I'm going to be buying an unlocked phone, so I know I'm going to be spending a few $100 as it is. So I'm already saving up and allocating what I've saved so far towards that. So that's a big thing for me as well. But in the end, when you're looking to buy a phone, most of them cost around the same amount of money. So it all depends on what you want. And then I've made the list and I've separated by storage options. So some offer 32 and 64 and all gigs of storage and all that. So if there's that much of a difference, like between storage space and RAM, then I'll keep it separate. If all the models offer the same other specs, and the only variance is storage, and I've kept it as one line. So you can check it out and all that good stuff. So that's all there is for this particular episode. So if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or anything like that, you can always email me at headphonesneil@yahoo.com. And you can find me on Twitter @patelN01. All links for the show, so past episodes, Patreon links, subscription links, so iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, and via RSS can be found at thetellin01.com. If you like this show and want more shows on the Geek.io network, you can visit geek-io.net. And also on a side note, Patreon has released a new feature for patrons that when a new post is submitted and it has audio attached to it, then patrons get their own subscription link. So if you want to keep track of updates that way, then that will be an option. So I'm actually working on a patron-only weekly post. At the moment, it's still in the works, but at the moment it's going to be an early in the week update, kind of probably around the between Monday and Wednesday, just as an update for what's on the queue for the podcast app for that week, what news might already be there, what the app or feature review may be, what the film review may be, if I'm still working on it, I'm considering what to do, so things like that. What if I have the Star Wars segment ready, then that. What the fall upcoming You Can Relax segment may be, whatever information. So basically whatever information is available, it'll just be a quick post of an update of what's going on there. So Patreons, once you've become a patron and there are updates, then that will be a thing. So I'm in the works and I'm expecting it to start next week, but if I don't, then I'll let you know on next week's episode. But that is all for this particular episode. So thanks for tuning in, and until next time.